Hello, hello, and welcome to season two of Healing Fucking Sucks. Today on the show, we have David Bennett. He is a hypnotist, an author, and a coach. If you guys have not seen his content, you guys are missing out. He goes live on TikTok all the time. David, how are you?
Good. I'm great. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. It's so good to finally have you on the show. You are a busy, busy man.
I do keep pretty busy. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, I mean, I practice hypnosis. I also am a coach. I have a background in education and also psychology. I worked in the counseling field, the addiction counseling field, for 6 years. And when I first got my TikTok, I just started making content that I enjoyed making. I didn't know anybody on TikTok, so I'm just like, I'm just going to make content that resonates with me. So I started focusing on four types of wellness: physical, emotional, social, and spiritual. And when I made a lot of the social type TikToks with relationships, those are the ones that went really viral. Like, people seem to really resonate with those. Especially when I talked about toxic and unhealthy relationships. So for a while, that dominated a lot of the content that I made. And then I wrote a book related to that. So yeah, that's how you and I basically met, because of that content.
Yeah, tell everybody about your book. And what was the driving force for you to write your book?
So the book's called Hooked on Heartbreak: A Strategic Guide to Understand and Break Your Addiction to a Toxic Ex or Partner. So the way I understand when you're stuck on someone, I understand it like as an addiction. In the book, I outline the reasons why, if you look at the signs of an addiction and the signs of someone that's stuck on someone that's bad for them, they almost entirely overlap. And when I would go live, I would bring that perspective to the live. And a lot of people have never really heard that perspective before. Sorry, let me adjust that. They never heard that perspective before. So I think a lot of people are like, wow, you know, it finally makes sense. This really is an addiction. You know, I know this person's bad for me, but yet I keep going back to them. They're serious. They're bringing serious consequences into my life, but I can't stop going back to them. I tried multiple times to leave and I can't do it. So I think I even say the reason I share it as an addiction is I think it makes the whole thing make sense when you understand it as an addiction. And the book is just pretty much outlining the basis of why I think it's an addiction, what happens to your brain when you fall in love with someone, what happens when you get in a relationship with them to your brain, also then what happens through the toxic elements like the trauma bond. And then the second half of the book is about dealing with all that, how to deal with all that.
Now, was this personal to you, or was this just through your education? Did you experience something yourself that made the push for you to start educating yourself on all of this and going to college, or no?
Well, so I went to college quite a while ago. So before I had my psychology degree before I really got into a lot of this, there was an incident in my life where, you know, I was in a relationship that was very toxic, and I believe I was mistreated in that relationship, and it ended in an unhealthy way, and it did deeply impact me. I will say that it's nothing compared to what most people go through. So I don't talk about that very much, because I wasn't physically harmed or emotionally harmed on a regular basis. The way it ended was, I would say, very toxic. Long story started, I've always been interested in relationships. In the book I mentioned, even in high school, one of my English essays was about dating and relationships, like trying to understand them. So I've always been fascinated by relationships. The idea of like why this person ends up dating this person, who's totally unlike this other person, why they end up together. I had always been fascinated by that. And where I really first started getting into this is back in the early 2010s. My brother and I would do coaching with local matchmakers. And our job was we would do talks for them. We would also go in and help. We would help some of their clients that might have been struggling to connect with their dates. So we would coach them on social skill type things. But whenever we would talk to the group of people, almost always they would ask, why is it I always fall for jerks? Why is it I always attract jerks into my life? So we created what we called the jerk talk. And we got into the research about what happens to your brain when you fall in love, what happens to your brain when you get in a relationship with someone, why it can be difficult to leave. So that was part of our talk. So when I started making this content in 2012, I had all that knowledge, and it just made a lot of sense when I started talking about unhealthy relationships.
That's really interesting, because most people that get into this type of education are people that suffered immensely from some kind of crazy, like, heartbreak with a narcissist or just a toxic, abusive person. But you did studies on this. So I wished I had been a part of the jerk talk. stopped when I was 19, David. Where were you?
Go into colleges and teach this. That was kind of what everyone was like, you should go into colleges and teach this. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, you should, because I don't even get me into the stuff that the school teaches us that does not benefit us in the long run. We need to learn all the communication in relationships, the toxicity on both sides, and how to, you know, not do that, how to be a healthy person yourself, and how to be a healthy person in a relationship, you know, what to tolerate, what not to tolerate. Mm. This would benefit everybody. I mean, it scares me for myself as someone who has done the work, because I obviously went through a very toxic, narcissistic relationship, not just one, but two. And if I really go back and look at it, at the age of 19, I also dated a narcissist. So let's go with three, okay?
Yes.
The number three follows me everywhere. So by the third one, I was like, okay, what is going on here, Jackie? But it's just so important, because now I'm single. I am single for the longest time that I've ever been in my life. I started out the gate at age 14 in a 5-year relationship. And that honestly was the best relationship I've ever had. And I didn't know it at the time. I had no idea. But now looking back, there was so much respect. There was so much just genuine love in that situation. We never had like an argument ever. We had good communication. And I don't even know how this happened, because I grew up in a very toxic household where communication was nada. It was not existent. It was very toxic. When that relationship ended, because we were very young, and I had a lot of dreams and goals to go to Hollywood and be a movie star and actress, you know, we all see how that worked out. You know, we were young. I wanted to explore life and see, you know, what there was out there. And now that I've been single for the longest time, which has been almost a year now, I literally, from the time I was 14, bounced from one relationship to the next, which was a learned behavior from my mother. And I was never without a relationship. Even if I wasn't in a relationship, I was still, you know, engaging with other men to get that attention, whatever it was that I was seeking or looking for at the time. And now, none of that. And it feels good, honestly. I needed this break. But it does scare me when I go back out there into the dating world. And I've told all of my friends, when I go back dating, you know, I'm past my mid-30s now. I want to go to a matchmaker, because I don't want to deal with this shit anymore. I don't want the year, you know, 6 months to a year trying to figure out this person's personality or whatever. I don't want to do any of that. I just want to, can we just cut to the chase here?
Yeah.
Matchmaker, make me a date.
I was just going to say, you know, you mentioned that you were never really truly single until recently. And that is something I see on almost every one of my lives. That's the pattern is I got into a relationship when I was in adolescence. I'd never been single for any period of my life until now. And I think that is part of the cycle. And that's why in the book, I say this on my lives a lot. Be single for a while. It's okay to be single. The fact that you've never been single, it's important to be single. It's very important to be single for a while. Because I think what ends up happening is we get this when we're young, you know, especially if we maybe don't feel love in our household, we fall for someone and that feeling feels so amazing, right? And we're not really, I think, addicted to a person necessarily. I think we're addicted to a feeling sometimes. And so we're looking for that feeling. So the minute that feeling ends because they ended or we have to end it because we know they're not good for us, our brain is, I want that feeling back right away. It's taking away a drug from an addict. So you literally are going to choose pretty much. I always say I know it's kind of funny in a way, you know, the standards usually when you're looking for that new person are usually I've got to be slightly attracted to them and they have to have a pulse and they have to show interest in. That's usually the standards when you're jumping from someone to someone, you know? And I've been there, trust me. I mean, I'm saying this from experience. I know. I have gone through the heartbreak, and I went through that. And I will say, I'm in a great relationship now, but that year that I was single was the best day I ever did. I grew more than I ever grew. I even look back with it fondly, because I did all kinds of cool things. I was doing a lot of the healing process stuff that I now share. So, I mean, a lot of people, I think, are scared of being single, but I think if you do it right, it's actually liberating to be single for the first time in a long time.
I would agree from experience. Yeah. Before, I just didn't know how to be alone, period. Mm-hmm. And all of my relationships were long. They were not short. My mm-hmm. first one was 5 years. That ended roughly around when I was 18 or so. And then 19, jumped into another 2-year relationship. After that one, I jumped into another 4.5-year relationship. After that was another 2-year relationship. After that was another 4.5-year relationship. And after that was a 3-year relationship. And it was over these relationships long before I left. And it's because I was scared of being alone. I didn't mm-hmm. know what to do with myself. And I think subconsciously, I was scared of facing myself. I think I was scared of facing my own demons. I think I used to couldn't even spend time by myself, period, if I was at home. Even if I did have a relationship, I would always be on the phone with someone or texting mm-hmm. someone. I never spent alone time with myself. I had serious issues. And now I love nothing more than to pretend my cell phone does not exist. And I've even told my mother at nighttime, I turn my phone volume completely off. So if someone dies when I'm asleep, I'm sorry, but I'll find out when I wake up tomorrow. I just need that time by myself now because I've gone my whole life without it. And I'm for once, you know, enjoying just myself, getting to know me, because for so long, I put so much time and effort into everyone else that I dated, whatever it is they love to watch, I would get into that. Whatever sport it was, mm-hmm. I would get into that. Whatever it was that they were doing, it was in my head, it was me showing like how much I loved and cared about them by getting into everything that they were doing. If they have certain meals, like I would love cooking that for them all the time or whatever. But then I realized when I was healing, not a damn one of them did that for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I just spent, like I said, so much time just pouring myself into all these other people, and it did not benefit me at all in any type of way. And at the end of the day, none of them had any of respect for me at all. And it's really, you know, taking those walks and self time to myself where I'm just, who's Jackie? What mm-hmm. does Jackie want to do today? Oh, I want to go treat myself to a lunch or dinner today. Cool. I'm going to go do that. Do I need anybody to go with me? No, I do not. And that's a great feeling, right?
It is. And, you know, I think that one of the reasons why we feel this urge to, I think, jump into relationships is we don't know who we are. And I think that you said, when I first was single after getting out of what I would consider a very heartbreaking relationship, I didn't even know who I was. I remember one time just screaming because I don't do things like that, but I was just so frustrated. I was trying to figure out who I was outside of either being in a relationship or trying to get into a relationship. So I'm like, I don't mm-hmm. think I'd even pick out a shirt without thinking about someone else. So it was a very important time, though. And I think, like you said, when you're single, you have to face who you are. You have to deal with, well, at least when you're alone, that can be the scariest thing, because you're coming to terms with who you really are. And I think a lot of relationships are, for a lot of people, relationships are kind of ways to escape, I think. They are, I need to, you know, I can't be single because I don't want to be though a single friend. I got to get in a relationship because who am I going to do stuff with, right? We get into relationships a lot of times for reasons that don't really, I think, advance, you might say, the higher versions of ourselves. And so when you reach a point where I have been so hurt, I have been so affected by this, you kind of have no choice but to do that work. Which is actually one positive result, I think, of when you reach that point where you've been broken down so much, you are at a point where you have to start to figure out who you are. And I was kind of forced to go through that work, and I'm glad I did, because, I mean, I consider myself, even that was 4 years ago, I consider myself almost an entirely different person from going through that process, and a better person, a much better person.
Yeah, same. I am so different now, but in the best way possible. And, you know, because I'm being the best version of myself for me once. So that means I can show up for others too in the best way possible. The healing for me, I had to get to a point where I call it the point of no return. It was the point of no return for me where I woke up one morning and I was like, fuck, I am in trouble. I was in so much mental, emotional pain. Before I moved to California, I had done a lot of healing and I only got so far into my healing and I felt a lot better. So I stopped. Later on, when tragedy came and I dated the narcissist and things blew up, I realized how unhealed I actually was and that I didn't finish that process. And I realized I had just swept the rest of it under a rug and just numbed myself from it because I had healed enough to where, you know, I felt better. And so I was at that point of literally, I was waking up every morning wanting to take my life. I was suicidal for sure. I already suffer with clinical depression, generalized anxiety, panic disorder, all of these things. But when I got put in this abusive situation with the narcissist, it just enhanced all of that and re-triggered everything. And I had to go back to square one. So do you have anything to say about when you've done a lot of the healing process and you're not just stopping at the point of feeling good? Do you have?
That's a good question. I think that for one, we're always healing. And I always tell people that it'll never be completely easy. It'll never be completely easy. Like, you still may be triggered at times. You still may wake up thinking about an ex. It still may be in your head at some level. But I always say, you know, that's actually a positive thing. It's coming. If you recognize that it's coming and it's coming less and less and you're dealing with it, that's a great thing. I lost a bunch of weight over a decade ago and, you know, I kept it off. But there are still moments. I mean, every day I walk in, you know, to break room, someplace I'm going, you know, there's going to be donuts there. I'm not going to not ever have a craving for a donut, or it might look good to me, but now I have the tools to deal with it. You know, I have the tools. I am working those tools. I'm not just mindlessly doing it. I'm considering it, contemplating it, and using those tools. So I think that, for one, like I said, we're always healing. That philosophy, we're always growing. Like, I'll be, you know what? I had this great insight, and it makes all the difference. Then 2 months later, oh my goodness, I had this other great insight, and now this makes all the difference. And I keep binding myself doing that. But I think the way I describe in the book, in terms of being ready for another person, is I think when you reach a point where you don't need that person. You don't need him. You don't need him to feel complete. You can find yourself attracted to someone and turn them down because you know your values don't align. I think those are two major points. And like I said, it is addictive in nature. You know, it is addictive in nature. And if you ever know anything about addiction, a lot of people, you know, they relapse. They get feeling good from the first, you know, brief period of healing. They think, I've got this. And then they're triggered again and they get into their craving. I think that's something to keep in mind, is that if you think you're ready, you're probably not ready. So it's best to go a little bit further. And that's why I think too, you know, that I do see this quite a bit when I work with people. I have a lot of clients, for example, that will schedule an initial appointment and not show up. They won't even show up. They'll schedule it. They'll be in a desperate state. I really want to work together. And then 2 days later, they won't show up for their appointment. And I think that goes back to the addictive nature of it, because you feel really bad. You really want to get out of it. But then something comes along that you get a little dose of your drug. You get a little dose of that. Then you start to feel good again. And so that's why the healing process often can get derailed, I think, in this area that we're talking about. It's very easy to, you know, you're feeling horrible. You're wanting to heal. But then you get that text from that person. Oh, well, they promised to do better. So I'm feeling good again. Or, you know, you've done it for 3 weeks and you get back on dating apps. You go, oh, wow, this person's going to solve my problems. I've healed. Then yeah. And it just keeps perpetuating, unfortunately.
Yeah. I came up with a system that worked for myself where I have a list of things that are just affirmations. And, you know, it's like, I forgive myself. I'm beautiful. I love myself. Yeah. That's just like very surface level stuff. It goes a lot deeper, but I go through during my meditation time and I read these out loud. I say them out loud. And if I feel energetically that little push that's like unsettling in my gut and spirit, I'm like, something's still there. Something slightly is still there and it's not fully healed yet. And I need to keep working on this section.
I like that. I like that.
Let's talk about what we can do during the healing phase, or if you are in a toxic situation that you can't get out of. Some of these people are stuck with their parents. They have abusive parents. Financially, people are stuck. What is some healthy tips and tricks and tools psychologically that people can do to keep them uplifted, trying to keep more looking towards the healthier side of these things instead of letting letting, you know, the darkness take over them?
That's a great question. I think, I just want to say back to the affirmations thing. I think affirmations are very powerful. I think affirmations are, in fact, I wrote a book on affirmations too. It's called Say It Like You Mean It. I wrote that about 10 years ago. Yeah. That's how powerful affirmations were for me. So I think anything that starts to change the story that you have told yourself, I think is very important. So if you're stuck with someone, a lot of times when we're in a toxic relationship, their narrative becomes our narrative. We start to show up as the version of us that they want us to be. So we now believe that we are worthless, that we're stuck with them. We can never leave. We can't do anything, that we're, you know, we'll never love ourselves. We'll never make it without them, right? They, at first, that wasn't our internal story. That was their reality. But after a while, we take on that reality ourselves to the point that they don't even have to tell us these things. We now are telling ourselves these things. So I think part of it is you have to start changing that story about who you are, right? So you can't leave yet, that's true. But there are a lot of things you can do within a relationship that can empower you, even to get you to leave. It could be something as simple as, of course, safely, obviously. You always want to do it safely. But to start to set boundaries, to start to get some of your hobbies back, to start to improve the way you treat your physical body, start to get a handle on some of the issues that you've been struggling with, maybe emotionally. Maybe you know, I see this a lot. People put off going to the doctor. They put off going to their therapist. They haven't read anything in a long time. They care about what they eat anymore. They've gained either a lot of weight or they have now underweight. So you can even just begin to start to get these things together. And the thing is these things can be so overwhelming that the trick of our brain is to say, well, there's just so much to do, so there's nothing I can really do. And that's a very paralyzing attitude, because we'll be like, well, it's so overwhelming. When our brain is overwhelmed with this big picture, we often just do nothing. So to break it down into little things like, well, I can't leave, I can't get a divorce yet, but I can call my friend out who I know is a lawyer, and I can start to ask her about the process. Or, you know, you want to make sure all this is legal, of course, but maybe you can start saving some money, put a little bit of money away for when you do leave. Or, you know, just little things like that that we think won't make a difference. But also, we often think, like, if we think internally, we're going to be motivated. But usually the most motivating thing we can do is take a small action step, like something small. Like a friend of mine, he's also a hypnotist like me, where we work together professionally, but the way he got to the gym when he was trying to work out was he just decided he was going to put his gym shorts on and touch the door handle. Because he knew if he did that, he'd leave and go to the gym. So his goal wasn't to get to the gym 4 times a week. It was to put his gym shorts on and touch the door handle. Because that was easy to do. That was something he knew he would do.
I really like that, because oftentimes we don't have, I like to call them our hype men. We don't have someone being like, make sure you get there today. You can do this. We have to do it for ourselves. Most of us do, you know, unless you are fortunate enough to have someone in your life that does that for you. So I like that. And I would have to agree on it with that. Just doing a small action towards it can create something huge and major that we didn't expect or that we didn't think that we could do. And I think we get in our heads too much. And like you said, the story that we tell ourselves, like, I'm weak, or I'm never going to do this. I can't make it. And that story can either come from ourselves. It can come from society. It can come from our culture. It can come from our parents. Generational trauma. And it's important just to remind people to, even if it's just one good thought a day, you know, to push yourself towards feeling better. Whenever I used to serve and feed the homeless a lot, the number one message I would put on the box that I gave their food on was that you are loved. Because I feel like love is the highest energetic state. Everybody needs to feel like they're loved, you know. I want to talk to you a few minutes about you hypnotizing people, David. Because I'm so intrigued. I've never been around someone that hypnotizes people before. I really don't know much about it. So will you tell the listeners about, like, are there different forms of hypnotism? What is it that you do specifically? How does it work? What does a session look like with you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So hypnosis basically is a way to get into the unconscious mind. It's about getting access to those parts of us that we aren't really aware of. We might not know why we do certain things. And I would argue that relationships are largely unconscious. Like, we don't know always why we're attracted to the people that we're attracted to. We often fall for people that we like. biologically know are bad for us. We get overwhelmed by maybe something that maybe they're flirtatious, maybe they're funny, maybe they're physically attractive, right? So, and those are all unconscious factors. Like, I always joke around, you know, no one wakes up in the morning. Well, let me just back up. Even like our, like, cravings for an ex or being triggered by him, right? No one wakes up in the morning and says, you know what? I think I'm going to pencil in, ruminating on my ex at 10 o'clock. At 1 o'clock, I think I'm going to be angry for an hour. And then I think at 9 o'clock, I'm going to give in and text them, right? No one consciously does that, right? It's unconscious. I mean, some people might. Like, some people are really self-aware. Like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do it anyway. I might as well schedule it. But that's a great example. That's all unconscious stuff, right? So hypnosis is about kind of getting into your unconscious and also making changes in your unconscious, because that's really why we do most of the things that we do. You know, it's why every New Year's, I think like 8% of people stick to their resolutions. It's because the resolutions are your conscious mind, but then you're presented with the things that you're addicted to or the things that really stimulate you at an unconscious level. Those are the things that we usually act on. So when I work with clients, yeah. I mean, it's not always this, I mean, there's elements of hypnosis. There are trance elements where I will, you know, get someone really relaxed, get them into kind of like that dream-like state between waking and sleeping. That's a part of hypnosis. But a lot of hypnosis is honestly just getting people to start to think in a more deep way that starts to get unconscious access. Starts to, like, there are questions that I ask. There are like ways to speak to get people, like, for example, if you've ever been like mesmerized by something, that would be a form of hypnosis. I would say like toxic people, like narcissists, the people that are really like coming on intensely are very hypnotic. So the dopey thing about hypnosis is when you're under hypnosis, you're more suggestible. You're more willing to do stuff you wouldn't consciously do. So you can use that in a good way. So you can like get someone hypnotized and they're more willing to make changes and things like that. But when you think about it, that's the basic, like when someone's super attractive and they're saying the right things and they're flirting and they're making all these promises, think about how suggestible we can get. You know, we put aside our values. We date someone even though they're the total opposite of us. We might be like a strongly religious and moral, and they might violate every one of those. But because they stimulated us at such an unconscious level, we overlook all that. So I would argue in my book that being stuck on someone toxic is a form of hypnosis, and you need to do some of that work to come to terms with that and get out of that.
Okay, so is hypnosis considered like woo-woo?
Well, that's a great question. Hypnosis is kind of... See, I'm kind of into like the scientific stuff, but I also have like a woo side too that I don't really like. I don't talk about that as much, but like, if you ever seen like the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, like people like Joe Dispenza, people like that, like I really resonate with that. So hypnosis is kind of in the middle. So hypnosis is pretty scientifically validated. Like, for example, there are a lot of people that can't, like they're allergic to anesthesia. They actually use hypnosis on those people to kind of put them out so they don't feel pain when they're undergoing surgical procedures. In fact, hypnosis was first used medically. It was first used before anesthesia existed. And if you look at like, even if you ever read the book, The Body Keeps the Score, related to trauma, he actually mentioned that hypnosis was one of pretty much the only treatment they had for trauma before, when they referred to it as shell shock. They would actually use hypnosis. So it's definitely scientific, but it also can go into the woo side because, I mean, a lot of people, you know, if you look at like, for example, I'm not saying I believe all this, but like a lot of the stories of like alien abductions or past life regression, a lot of that stuff typically happens under hypnosis. So it's kind of right in the middle, like straddling both lines, which is 100% cool with me because I like both sides.
Yeah. So it's energetic then, right?
Yeah, I would say so. Yes. So hypnosis. So I don't really know much about brainwaves, but like when you're under hypnosis, you go into what's called the theta brainwave state. And that's the brainwave state of deep meditation, and also that twilight state between when you're getting ready to fall asleep and you're getting ready to wake up. So a lot of what you might call like mystical experiences, psychic experiences, those things typically happen in the theta brainwave state, or even as you get closer to the delta wave state, which the delta wave state is predominant when we're dreaming. So hypnosis absolutely, I would say, will have that effect. It absolutely has an effect energetically, if you want to use those terms. Yes.
So, okay. So in other words, because I'm trying to tie the two together, parallel the two between how like we can basically be mesmerized and, you know, hypnotized by like a narcissist, but then you can also use it medically. So it could be used for the good or bad.
Yes, absolutely.
So what is like a typical scenario for like one of your clients that come in and they've never been hypnotized before, what's a typical concern and like how do you address it? Like if it's someone that wants to stop smoking cigarettes, do you do that type of thing? Or is it like a broad spectrum of stuff that you deal with? Or is it just like inner healing?
I do want to mention this real quick, but I don't think like a narcissist or is like intentionally hypnotizing, probably. I do want to make that clear. Like, I don't think, like, I would argue even companies use hypnotic tools to like get us to buy their products. I don't know if they're intentionally saying we're using hypnosis, but it is hypnotic in nature. I would agree with that. So I do believe, kind of like you mentioned, that this powerful force that is often kind of against us to keep us kind of in a different type of programming that keeps us stuck on, you know, big corporations or keeps us stuck on a bad person. We can use this same type of tool to change our life for the positive, right? We can change our programming. This is a way to look at it. So yes, I work with all kinds of clients. Like I work with smoking clients, weight loss clients, and clients that want inner healing. I've done past life regressions. Like I've been at conferences, done work at conferences where people were interested in things like that. So typically, I'm doing a couple of things. Like when I'm getting to know a client, the questions I'm asking are hypnotic in nature. I'm getting them to starting to bypass what in hypnosis we call the critical factor. The critical factor is anytime we go to make change, something comes in our head is like, well, I can't do that. Or, you know, like some of my clients, they'll come in and say things like, I will never get over my ex. I will never find someone again like them ever. Or, you know, I don't like healthy foods. That's just the way it is, right? So what I'm trying to do is to get them to that voice and that reality to shrink, you might say, and to start to build up this spark of the reality that believes, you know what, maybe I can redefine my healthy is. Maybe low-carb foods are the way to go, and I love low-carb foods. Or maybe, you know, maybe I will meet someone great. I always joke, you know, a lot of people are stuck on the X. They're like talking about this deep spiritual connection, but I'm like, you know, you can literally walk into a Panera and probably meet like 10 people who are better than your ex. So you're totally about your ex. Like, you're totally about it. Like, you're not, I gotta get them to see that. Like, if I just told them that outright, their critical factor would kick in. They'd be like, that's not true. So you gotta kind of work in a way that bypasses that so you can get into the unconscious mind to start to consider new possibilities, to start to imagine those new possibilities. And then once you can imagine it for the first time, then you can start to take some steps to do something about it. That's basically the philosophy behind the process.
Nice. I think I'm going to be contacting you to set up an appointment. Can you do it over the phone? Oh, cool.
And most of my, I do have a local office where I do some work, but most of it is done over Zoom. Yeah, most of it's done over Zoom. Absolutely.
Okay, because I'm currently on the East Coast and I don't know where you're located. So
I'm in Ohio. Yeah, I'm in Ohio. Oh, okay. Most of it is done on Zoom. Most of it's done on Zoom. Yeah. I say 80% of the work, yeah.
That is very interesting. I think I've known one person that went to a hypnosis to stop smoking cigarettes. But other than that, I haven't been really surrounded by people that have had that experience. And I like to experience new things and see what works for me.
Oh, well, yeah, reach out. I mean, hypnosis, I got into hypnosis because I started to get into it for myself. And it was pretty much the one thing. And I define hypnosis very broadly. Like I said, it's more than just, you know, staring at something and going into a trance. I define it broadly in terms of, you know, changing, you know, deeply and unconsciously changing who you are, exploring who you are. Like shadow work, I would consider to be hypnotic in nature. It's getting into those things that consciously you don't want to admit or haven't admitted. And once you bring that to light, then you can deal with it properly. So hypnosis has been the one thing that has impacted my life. Like it has been kind of the stream that's run through the positive changes in my life. So I use it personally and I studied it like individually. I have a degree in psychology, but it wasn't until 2020. I'm like, you know what? It's changed my life so much. I'm using it when I work with clients in other areas. Why don't I just focus on hypnosis? Because it's the stream that like flows through everything that I was doing. So that's why I finally officially got into it. It's been very impactful in my life. As you might tell, I get very excited about it.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I was like, I know absolutely nothing about this. Please tell me everything. So
I have
a couple of questions, notes that I took down. We're going to backtrack a little bit if that's okay.
Sure.
So I wanted to talk about like our time and our energy, what we're doing with it, and are we serving ourselves, right?
Right.
So that's in any relationship. That's even if you're not in a relationship.
Right. Yes.
What are some quick examples of what people can do to, number one, acknowledge if they are serving themselves, or if they're not, what can they start doing? What are some things?
So what I consider kind of the currency of what you're serving is your attention. Like I would say, like I can break it down to time, energy, and money. Those are the most accurate. At an unconscious level, what you're giving your time, energy, and money to, I think, are the best indicators of kind of who you're serving, you might say. And I think it all boils down to attention. Like, what are you giving your attention to? What you're giving your attention to is where your life's going. So we often aren't aware of what we're giving our attention to. Like, for example, maybe we're giving 4 hours a day to scrolling. Maybe we're given, like, maybe at work, you know, we're in the middle of a task and a text comes in from our toxic ex. We drop everything we're doing and then our attention goes to them for, like, the next hour. And attention can include texting them, but it could also include being emotionally worked up for that hour and getting nothing done. So I think we often, in hypnosis, we use the term deletion. We often delete out information from our day. So we might say, well, I'm giving my attention to myself because I said affirmations for 5 minutes. But what we forget about is that maybe we just gave 4 hours to mindlessly scrolling, or we gave 2 hours to dealing with the chaos of someone toxic. And I will say, it's hard to not give your attention to someone toxic because they're always coming at you all the time. So the first step is absolutely evaluating like where you're actually giving your time. Like what you're actually giving. Are you prioritizing, like, are you scheduling seeing your friends, or are you canceling seeing your friends because you're giving attention to something else? You know, are you setting 3 alarms to get up in the morning to a job that's destroying you? Or are you setting 3 alarms to remind you to sign up for yoga, right? So I think it's important to honestly evaluate like where your actual attention's going. And I think a lot of people will find like, oh my goodness, like I got an internet fight for like 4 hours, or I was in a screaming match with my partner for 3 hours. Like a lot of times these things just take control of us and we're not even aware of that. So to start you in the book, I call it the 7-step creation protocol. It's basically waking up to the automatic things that you do, stepping back from the things that you've done hundreds of times that you've never questioned, and pausing and waking up and starting to observe some of those things. And once you wake up and observe it, then you can deal with it. So maybe you're like, oh my goodness, this is the time I sit around and scroll for 2 hours. So maybe you can instead consciously choose to do something else for those 2 hours. Like maybe buy a book on Amazon, you're going to read during some of those 2 hours. Maybe you find yourself, your programming leads you to the second your ex or partner messages you, you drop everything. So maybe you're going to start now to wait 10 minutes. Every time you get a text, you're going to wait 10 minutes to reply. Obviously, you want to be safe if you're being threatened or something, but you're going to wait 10 minutes. Maybe you'll choose to consciously fill that 10 minutes with something that builds you up. Maybe you'll watch an inspirational video. Maybe you'll read something, a book. Maybe you'll reach out to a friend you haven't reached out to. Maybe you'll tell someone you're grateful for. Like, it's about taking the default things you used to do and replacing that with new things. And the more you do that, the more you're literally rewiring your brain to make that your default. So what you'll find is eventually, if you do that for a year, now you don't even want to binge watch or scroll for 4 hours. Now you're actually going out and buying new books and maybe even writing a book. See, that's how the change process happens. Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah, it's really important during, you know, your healing phase to be very self-aware of what you're watching, what you're listening to, what you're reading. Yes. Where your focus goes, the energy grows, guys. I learned it the hard way. So I used to watch, like, you know, stuff on serial killers all the time. Yeah. And all these crime documentaries or docuseries. And now I can't watch any of those at all. The energy level on those is just so low. And I've picked myself up so high that I want to keep myself on that high. So I don't want to go back down that rabbit hole ever again.
Well, and too, I think that's a good point. I think too, a lot of, you know, what ends up happening too is it's really easy to spend all your time paying attention to, like, even your toxic ex or people just like them, you know, watching content all day about how horrible people are and how horrible everyone mistreats everyone. You know, that can keep you stuck in the problem too. And that, if you've been traumatized, that's going to seem like a natural thing to do. So that's part of the intentional healing process, is to even catch yourself, I think, doing that a lot, which is something I did for a while.
Yeah, I agree. I was just talking the other day with Randy White about how the content creators that are making everything on narcissistic abuse, I love all of them. A lot of them and their content is the reason how I got educated and healed. And I will forever hold a grateful spot in my soul and heart for them. But once I got to a certain point in my healing, it was no longer good for me to go back and keep watching that stuff. once I got it, once I educated myself on it and I could see it, it was time to move on to happier things, because it's just going to keep re-triggering stuff over and over and over again. It becomes redundant. You're not growing anymore. You're like at a certain level and you're not going up or down. You know, I like to try to keep moving up the ladder if I can. I'm just in a good space now, is all.
I'm just going to say I agree. And, you know, I think that if we've been traumatized, our brain often thinks, you know, if I just learn more about the problem, I'll feel better. Like, if I can just discover the 500th reason or the 500th way they hurt me, I'll finally feel better.
Yeah.
But I always say, if finding the 500th way was going to be the breakthrough, then why was it finding the 500th way or the 500th way, right? So it's important at some point after you, I think, like you said, have accurately processed it, you've dealt with it, you've owned it, whatever it is. I think there is a point where you start to have to make your focus on healing, make your focus on the destination rather than the past and where you're currently stuck in. So I absolutely agree with that 100%. 100%.
Yeah, I feel like it was a form of closure for me, because in most toxic relationships, you're not going to get closure from that person. Right. That person's not going to say, I intentionally hurt you. This was all premeditative. I didn't care about your feelings. They're not going to say these things and you're never going to get them. And so many of us are craving that closure, craving the truth, just to hear that person say, yes, I did this. But most of the time, sadly, that's not going to happen for us. Right. And I found myself watching the videos over and over again. So we're wrapping up here, David. You also do coaching. You don't just do the hypnotist stuff. So tell everybody a little about your coaching, and then I'm going to have you tell everybody where you can find you.
Okay, great. So it all kind of relates. So it's all, by my definition, hypnosis, but it's also coaching in the sense that usually between sessions, I'm giving them hypnosis tracks to listen to. I have worksheets, workbook, activities, things that they do. Like, for example, one of the tools that we do like some shadow work. So there's like a worksheet, like a detailed like shadow work journal thing that I came up with. So that's part of the process. Also, like a healing roadmap is an exercise that we do. If some clients have communication issues, part of it is working on those issues, learning how to communicate empathy, but also assertively. So there's a lot of tool-based stuff that I do depending on the nature of the issue the client's dealing with. And you said, where to find me? So the best place to find me probably right now is TikTok. DT Bennett, DTBENNETT is my username. I also have a website. So I have a twin brother. My identical twin brother, yeah. We both do the same type of content. We've had people come on and be like, there's two of you. Sometimes people don't even know there's two of us. It's like, oh, I thought you looked a little different in that last video. So we have a website called Bennett's Twins. So BENNETT. And that has a lot of information about our background, you know, what we do. So those are the best places I would say to check us out.
Yeah. And David has his link tree that is attached to his TikTok. And you open it up, you can find his websites, his coaching, his books, where you can purchase those. But as always, I am going to post all the information and the show notes below. That way you guys can just find it and click on it. And I highly recommend going and watching David's content. He's very educational. I love how you approach things. It's very informative. You can tell you have a lot of experience with this. So I want to thank you for coming on today. Do you have anything you want to say to the listeners as like your footnote, your dropout? Do you have like a quote of the day that you leave everybody with?
Yeah, I just want to say that healing, you know, that when you first start out heal, it's going to seem scary. It might seem like you'll never get through it. But I can tell you, as someone that has worked the process, as someone that has helped others work the process, that once you work it, there's going to be ups and downs. If you're expecting like it's going to go just like this and everything's going to get better, you got to get over that attachment. But it's going to go kind of like this. But eventually, it does end up. I promise. And the healing, I get really excited about the healing process because I've seen the benefits in my own life. I've seen it in the lives of others. So if right now your listeners are like, there is no way, like he's so positive, he's talking about all these great things I can do, there's no way I can do it, it's great for other people, it's not for me, I promise you, it is for you. It is for you, and you have that in you. It may not seem like it, but I promise you do.
Yes, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, guys. Mm-hmm. I promise. I didn't name my podcast Healing Fucking Sucks because it was a joy ride on the way here. It was not. I want to end this episode with thanking you so much for coming on to the podcast, and I want to leave everybody with this. Love yourself. love others, be kind to yourself, and be kind to others, guys. I will see you next week.